Congratulations! If you are looking at this webinar, you've come a long way. Just look at that finish line. It's time for the final sprint. Now, when runners undertake long-distance challenges, they know how to pace themselves during the middle stretch. They get a steady gait and continue and continue and continue. Yet, as they near the finish line, their eyes see the goal and they make a shift. The final sprint is different. They draw from deep within and charge for the finish. No longer the steady gait, but an enormous final push, speeding up and giving it all they can muster. Now that's where we are in your book project. We have come to the final sprint. You can see the goal from here. Look up and realize that this last push will take you to the finish. Now, let's be honest. This is not the most fun part of your race, but it is the most rewarding. This is what gets you to the finish line. It's what gets your book published, and it's what causes the world to be able to enjoy what you have done. Just thinking about that gives you the energy boost you need to finish the course. Now, I do hope that your book is coming along well. If you aren't quite satisfied yet, though, join the crowd of writers who have gone before you. At this point, most authors are not quite ready to publish. So today, we're going to take a look at some ideas for polishing your work. What can we do to take an ordinary book and make it extraordinary? Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be reading our work over and over, and in this step, we will start with the big picture first. Does your book say what you want it to say? Do you make that special point? Will your readers receive the benefit you're aiming to give them? Have you made your points in a clear and concise way? Will your readers understand what you mean? In their book, Made to Stick, brothers Chip and Dan Heath talk about something interesting. They call it the curse of knowledge, which plagues us as writers. When we know something, our natural inclination is to think that everyone knows it. We have the impression that it's common knowledge just because we know it. Yet actually, what we know is very unique to us. Nobody knows exactly what we know. Sometimes when we make this assumption that others know what we know, we'll leave out of our writing the details, which could bring others to better understanding about what we're saying. For instance, if your book contains biblical concepts, you can make a lot of assumptions which aren't true. You could assume that people understand the basic tenets of Christianity, when actually some may not. If they haven't grown up in a Christian environment, they may be many ideas which are foreign to them. In fact, there are lots of people who were raised in a church which did not stress the Bible, and in those cases, the people might not even be familiar with even the most basic stories and concepts. As you reread your work, look for the places where you may have assumed that they had your knowledge. You might want to elaborate in these places, creating a greater foundation for your ideas. As I share this, I'm reminded of a personal experience. I was leading a women's retreat where we were using biblical concepts for inner healing and restoration, and one of the new converts raised her hand. She said, "Don't think that everyone knows what's in the Bible. I wasn't raised in a home where we read the Bible, and I don't know the stories you're discussing." Needless to say, I quickly adjusted my presentation in order to help the newcomers, but this was an eye-opening experience. She wasn't talking about obscure passages of Scripture. She was talking about stories like David and Goliath or the woman with the issue of blood. This lady had not heard about anything in the Bible. It was not until I read Made to Stick that I put a label on my problem of assuming too much, the curse of knowledge. I like that concept. Now, the way to avoid this curse of knowledge is to step back and take a fresh look at your writing. Are you assuming knowledge on the reader's part? If so, think how you can elaborate on the basics of what you're saying. Explain more. Include more stories or word pictures in order to create understanding. Explain and build foundation. That's the key. Another part of this overall assessment is to see if your thought progresses the way you want. Do you wind up with the big idea you're trying to convey? If so, great. If not, why not? Sometimes we jumble our chapters and cause confusion. Think about the progression of your book. It's a good idea to start in the introduction and even first chapter with promises of the outcome. You can even announce your final thoughts here. Then you back up to the foundation for your message, and each chapter provides greater illustration or enhancement of your ideas. Or, say your book is an autobiography. The order might be strictly chronological. Your introduction could be a statement of the main lessons you have learned or unique perceptions you have acquired through living your own special life. Then your chapters could lead through the years and years of your experiences. So what if your book is a teaching book? Your introduction will promise what they can learn, then the chapters will step by step take you to the finish line. Perhaps your book is a collection of writings and letters or poems with many different perspectives. In this case, your introduction may explain why you have wanted to write in this way and include an explanation about you and your views. In other words, who are you and what do you stand for? Your purpose, your point of view, maybe even how you came to these views. Then you can organize your collection into related groups. Groups either related by thoughts or chronology. These groups are your chapters. The bottom line is that in this assessment of your work, you are maximizing the impact of your book. You're making it into something which can be understood and enjoyed in a significant way. Now, in finalizing the order of your book, remember that the most important parts are the beginning and the end. Of course, you want all of your book to be a good read, but know that the first impression and the final impact are what the readers will remember the most. Those are the things which will stick with your readers. Now, after we have established the big picture, we'll start analyzing our work chapter by chapter and line by line. So what are we looking for? Is the writing clear? Will our readers understand what we are saying? Is it interesting? Will they want to keep reading? Would a story or word picture inserted into a paragraph make something more meaningful? Remember, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and when we leave our readers with mental images, we help them retain our messages. So as you go through each chapter, paragraph, and line, look for these places which need to be enhanced. Sometimes a sentence can just be sloppy. If the words are rearranged or other words are substituted, the sentence can take on a new life. One of the big things to avoid is unnecessary repetition. As you read, do you find the same words or phrases being repeated too frequently? If so, you might want to find other words to substitute or even cut out the phrases altogether. A few years ago, I was asked to read a book by a new author. This person had an amazing story of divine intervention. She had been an abused child and even through God's hand had been miraculously delivered from her environment. I sat down to read with great anticipation, and I knew the story and wanted to see what this new author had to say. But as I read, I was surprised to see the repetition in phrases. There was one phrase which crept up over and over. "I was so depressed and rejected, I didn't feel that I could go on," she said. I would turn the page, and there it was again, and again, and again. Then I would go on to the next chapter, and there it was, the same phrase. "I was so depressed and rejected, I didn't feel that I could go on." Then every now and then it was, "I was so empty, I didn't feel that I could go on." The writer had asked me to advise her on her book, and so I did. I was honest. I pointed out the repetition. When the same sentences or phrases are used in such a repetitive fashion, The sentences lose their effectiveness. They even become boring. Such repetition also makes it seem that you don't have enough to say, so you're just saying the same thing over and over. The writer rearranged her wording and cut out the phrases a few times. Her final product was a great book which brought hope to lots of people. So as you read through your manuscript, look for this: too much repetition. Now, when it's a matter of one word being used too much, you have a great tool at your disposal. The thesaurus.com is a free online thesaurus. You can plug your word into the search slot and it will provide a bunch of different ideas. You can select other ways of saying something similar. So let's go on. Active verbs are usually better than passive ones. Now let me explain. Action depicts life and energy, whereas passiveness depicts, well, passiveness. For example, this is active. 3 men attended the meeting. Passive. The meeting was attended by 3 men. Active. The young boys sensed danger. Passive. Danger was sensed by the young boys. Usually, the active arrangement of your sentence works better, but not always. I would just recommend that you look for those passive moments in your writing and decide if there's a better way to make your point. This is something I have to watch for in my own writing. Often, I'll gravitate toward the passive in my first writing and decide later to change it. Now, one example of this passive mistake may be familiar to you. Years ago, local newspapers would include in the social section the goings and comings of the people in the community. They would include trips, parties, all kinds of activities. And when reporting on the parties, writers would mention the food, decor, attendees, and very often would finish their report with a famous sentence: "A good time was had by all." Now, people, this is the epitome of a passive sentence, and today brings laughter whenever you hear it. Besides being passive, this sentence is corny and couldn't possibly be true. It sounds like somebody was trying to write in a sophisticated way but didn't know how to do it. In case you forget what a passive sentence is, you can remember this sentence and you'll be reminded. Okay, let's go on. As you're critiquing your words, look at the adjectives you've used. Remember, in an earlier video, we talked about painting pictures with your words. Try to use words, especially the adjectives and adverbs, which involve the senses of or emotions. For instance, instead of "the girl ate an apple," you could say "the girl bit into a lush apple," or "the tiny blonde girl bit into the huge red juicy apple." You get the point. You can look through your book and see where your writing seems too bland and where you need to add some finishing touches for greater interest. One warning, however, you don't want to go overboard on this. One writer I know adds too much, in my opinion. He actually has a huge audience, so many people must like that way of saying things, but for me, it's excessive. He adds what I call flowery words in every sentence and every paragraph. It's so different from the way anyone would talk, so I think it's too much. Which brings me to another point. You get to decide what is too much or too little. You are writing for your audience, and you want to communicate with them in a way that will benefit them the most. So you decide. Now, speaking of communication, how formal or relaxed should you be in your language? Years ago, writers were rigidly held to a high standard of English grammar. There were rules and more rules which were adhered to stringently. If you broke them, you couldn't be considered a good writer. But along came William Faulkner, T.S. Eliot, and many others, and these people wrote like people talked. They used slang and they broke every rule, and guess what? Faulkner won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1949. Since that time, people have been more relaxed in their writing. I, for one, break some of the rules. Like, don't split your infinitives, putting an adjective between 2 and the verb. For instance, To run quickly is okay. To quickly run breaks that rule. Or what about this? Don't leave dangling participles. Of what was she speaking is okay. What was she speaking of breaks the rule because the participle of is there without the object. It's dangling, in other words. Never start your sentence with a conjunction like and or but. Or what about this one? Never include a sentence fragment. Always have a subject and a verb in your grouping. Well, I confess, I break these rules often and I break them on purpose. I write like people talk, real people in the real world. Sometimes it seems that there's a greater emphasis if you start a sentence with and or but. It's still connected to the prior sentence, but starting a new sentence. When we're talking, we speak a casual version of English, not the formal one. Thus, we throw in slang expressions and informal grammar. Frankly, I think writing is more effective if the language is like the current usage. Thus, I do break some of the rules. Now, I don't mean that we should be sloppy with our writing. I just mean that we should write like we talk. Once again, this is your decision. You'll be the one to make it for yourself. The next item is check your spelling. Now, even if you break some of the grammar rules, your spelling should be accurate. If you write using Microsoft Word, you can run a spell check to see if you've misspelled any words. I learned the significance of that when writing my first book, Forever Upward. Somehow, I missed the word centurion. I spelled it with an A and not an O and didn't catch it until I had stacks of boxes loaded with books. Definitely too late to change. Since that lesson learned, I have been careful to check and recheck spelling in my work, even after I think it's complete. Now there's something else you'll need to watch for. There's some words which sound the same but have different meanings and different spellings, homonyms. The spell check can't decipher what you're saying, so you will allow misspellings to slip by with these words if you're not careful. For instance, we all know about the three words for two, T-O, T-O-O, and T-double-O, but I will tell you people often mix these up. I've seen it very many times. Now, I have included with this lesson a PDF list of some homonyms to help you avoid some mistakes. Recheck all of your titles now, and your book title and your chapter titles. If you want to change any of them, now is the time to do it. Remember, use power words and words which grab emotion. You want to entice your readers to read the chapters. Okay, we've come very close to the end. It's time to write your conclusion. The conclusion is the wrap-up of your book. Sometimes people like to summarize what they've been saying by going back over the highlights. Others want to leave some final thoughts, the final outcome of all that they have said. The main thing here is to decide what you want to leave with people. What will be the final impact of your book? And it's a good idea to include some highlights of what you have said throughout the book. The next item, write a short author's bio. Obviously, this is not part of the book proper. However, you will want to include a short write-up about yourself as the author. This will come at the end of your book, after the final chapters. People want to know who is talking. Why should they listen to you? What experience or training do you have which makes you the one they should trust? Your bio should be short and to the point. All of us have histories which can fill an encyclopedia, and obviously we can't include everything, so think of the special parts of your experience which give you the authority to write this book. You might want to include highlights of an episode in your life which brought you to this place. The main thing, establish your authority. The bio should be written in the third person, like someone else was writing it, so it will say he or she instead of I. In fact, that mode allows for more bragging, so it's a good thing. You will also want to include a headshot. A small one will work. Now, this is going to be in black and white in most of your books, so you don't want one which is too pale. Yet a casual photo will work really well. Just let your readers know who you are. Wow, this is it. You're now ready to design and publish your book. You're almost ready to sell and give away your very own book. Just keep your eye on that goalpost. It's really close now. Just a couple of hurdles and you'll be finished. Congratulations.